Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 19, recorded Thursday, October 20th, 2005. Today's topics, colors during travel, worrying about avian flu in the air, and time in one of the last southern cities. Hey, this week, coming to you from the Marriott Courtyard in East Memphis, in Memphis, Tennessee, decided to short cycle this podcast a little bit, get back to my sort of midweek schedule, recording on the road. I found that the home studio recording is just a bit more difficult. Sort of kids running around, wife yelling at the kids, neighbors' dogs barking, neighbors yelling at the dogs, lawnmowers going off. I tell you, I miss the peace and the quiet and the solitude of my hotel bathroom. I'm just on a two-day up and back to Memphis this week. I'll tell you, you can tell that Northwest Airlines owns this airport. $1,000 for a seven-day advance round-trip ticket. And you know, they do the exact same thing to Minneapolis. But here in Memphis, I paid $1,000 for an hour and 20-minute flight from O'Hare to Memphis. And next week, I'm paying $300 for a seven-day advance fare for a four-and-a-half-hour flight to L.A. No wonder these guys are going into bankruptcy. I'll tell you, though, this can't be good for business here in Memphis. It's just so expensive for people to come down here. You know, I read in the paper yesterday that that the business community here in Memphis is worried about losing their hub as Northwest Airlines goes through bankruptcy. You know, I think they'd welcome the opportunity to bring a little bit of sanity in the airfares. You would think they would go begging to Southwest just to bring a couple of flights in here and press the fares down to something that looks like normality. Following up on topics from last week's Travel Commons podcast, I'll tell you, I jinxed myself when I talked about the end of the shoe carnival in last week's Travel Commons podcast. And on top of it, where did it happen to me? It happened to me in O'Hare Wednesday morning. I could not believe it. I walked through, and this wasn't even my regular airplane shoes. These were a pair of Bass loafers. So, I mean, the heel was even less. There was absolutely no sole. And as I'm about ready just to stroll through, the screener presses me on taking my shoes off. I normally take the secondary search on that, but I was really tight on time, and so I just put them through. Of course, I went right through, got a complaint form, and the guy looks at me and says, well, what's wrong? And I told him the story, and I showed him my shoes, and he just laughed, and he said, well, those are borderline. I looked at him, I said, come on. I said, I have never taken these shoes off at O'Hare, and I go through this airport 2 to 3 times a week. And he just laughed, and he looked at me, and I knew he agreed with me. So I don't know, though. I jinxed myself. Hey, we're continuing to receive comments on our best U.S. Airline poll. In last week's podcast, David Glickman of Welland, and I'm sure I've either forgotten a phantom syllable in that town name someplace, but Welland in the U.K., and David says that's about 25 miles north of London. Well, he told us a story of how American Airlines took a fiasco on one of their flights out of Puerto Vallarta and really gained, turned it, and to use the old cliche, made lemonade out of a lemon, and really gained an enthusiastic and loyal customer, somebody like David going off and, you know, taking the time to post that story. Today, there was a posting from what I would say would be a sold Midwest Airlines flyer, formerly Midwest Express out of Milwaukee, and they're actually out in front of the polling now. They've got 2 vote lead out in front of American and United. But here's the reasons that this voter said for their vote. For those who've never flown Midwest Airlines, this is why I believe it is the best, read, most comfortable airline. As long as you're flying their signature service flights, all of the seats in the plane are first class sized, 2 across, leather seats. You can sit comfortably on a full plane without rubbing the person next to you for the entire flight. I always think that's a good thing, never to rub my fellow passenger. Basically, the whole plane is first class, although the legroom is more like coach on other airlines. Their non-signature service flights are normal commuter flights, a la American Eagle, and offers no advantage. So interesting thought here. As we've said before, different people choosing different airlines for different reasons, and this voter, and it seems like a number of voters of our poll, pulling out Midwest Airlines for the near first class comfort at coach prices. As always, thanks to everyone who sent me notes at travelcommons.com, that address, comments@travelcommons.com, or have left comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com.
When the leaves come falling down, in September when the leaves come falling down.
The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the colors of travel. You know, it's 90 degrees here in Memphis, but it's beginning to crisp up north. It was in the mid-50s in Chicago. And flying out Wednesday morning out of O'Hare, I could see the tops of the trees starting to turn red and yellow. And, you know, those colors were even more accentuated as they're sort of highlighted or held up against sort of the remaining green leaves lower down in the trees. And, you know, this is the time to fly in and out of places like Chicago or Detroit or Minneapolis or White Plains, New York. You know, the western approach in and out of Chicago comes across a forest preserve that is just full of oaks. It's actually out near Schaumburg, Illinois. And this time of year, it starts to really, as the leaves change, it really starts to be a beautiful climb out. And the western approach to Detroit Metro Airport comes across really sort of the stands of maples that line I-94 and across sort of Ann Arbor. And again, you know, as you're pulling out and rotating out, just the red of those maples is just it is sort of the classic fall or the classic autumn picture. And, you know, noise abatement procedures as you come out of White Plains, Westchester County Airport in suburban New York, you know, normally a pain, but this time of year it is really special because they take you low, along the Hudson River Valley. And again, just the trees as they start to turn very, very pretty. You know, this is very different from, say, the water approaches that you get into either LaGuardia or Boston Logan Airport, where you're just, you know, sort of skimming the waves there. You know, at these airports and some others, you're coming across great stands of trees, and it just, like I said, it reminds you that it is fall. So between now and Thanksgiving, really, it is the time to grab sort of window seats on the flights in the Midwest. And, you know, actually, like every business traveler on most flights, I go for the aisle seats. I'm there, I'm sitting down, I'm popping open the laptop, I'm cranking through a bunch of work. But every once in a while, on those flights that I don't have a backlog of work, that I'm not trying to crank through, you know, 40 or 50 emails with my head down, I will take a window seat and spend a good bit of time staring out at the ground. And it's sort of really the colors that make it into the notes that I jot down in my travel journal. You know, flying into San Jose, those sort of wrinkled browns of the coastal mountains contrast against the pale blue of what is oftentimes a cloudless sky. In Lisbon in Portugal, it always struck me just sort of the rust red, the red slate roofs of the apartment buildings and how they contrasted against the whitewashed walls and the white of the drying clothes out on the lines. Back in Chicago, if you're not taking the western approach, but instead you're taking the eastern approach and coming to the city across Lake Michigan, it's sort of the contrast between the black of the John Hancock Building right there on the shoreline, and the blue of Lake Michigan during the summer, or the white of the lake ice during the winter. Again, that contrast just sort of grabs you. And, you know, coming down through the clouds in Cork, Ireland, sort of the brilliant greens that grab you as you break that last cloud layer. And there, cloud layer is pretty common coming into Cork. You see that sort of checkerboard of different greens. So they're all bordered or sort of bounded, contained by these dark gray stone walls. And then, you know, one place that always strikes me for sort of the lack of contrast is London, sort of the grays of London that make the ground sort of only gradually visible as you break through the clouds. I mean, there have been times in London that sitting in a window seat looking out, the only reason I knew we'd landed is because I felt the thud of the landing gear touch the runway. I'll tell you, one set of colors that's always struck me is it was in a hotel room in Bologna, Italy. And I had grabbed the sewing kit off the bathroom counter to tighten up a shirt button that had been hanging on by, well, hanging on by a thread. And something looked different. I just couldn't figure it out. And so I ended up pulling out another sewing kit out of my suitcase, one that I had picked up at a Hyatt in the U.S. a couple of weeks prior. And the thread colors were completely different. The Hyatt kit had sort of white and black and pink and red and blue, all the sort of, you know, the colors we're familiar with. And the threads of the Bologna sewing kit were all earth tones. I mean, mustard yellow and beige were the brightest colors that they had there. But like I said, this time of the year, the brightest colors, those sort of fire reds and those bright yellows as you're climbing out is the are the things that remind you that that we are in fall, and pretty soon we're in the next phase of travel delays caused by the white of snow. The next topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, flying with bird flu. You know, if you remember back to podcast number 15 at the end of September, I picked up a bad cold on my flight from O'Hare to San Francisco. I mean, it was a really ornery one. It stuck around for a couple of weeks, and, you know, quite honestly, it still has me every once in a while hacking a cough up some sort of 4 weeks now later. And I'll tell you what, this got me worrying a little bit about this avian flu that everybody's talking about, this H5N1 avian flu. I was actually listening to some stuff on it on the World's Technology podcast as I was driving up to O'Hare yesterday. But I'll tell you, this thing's brewing up in China and it's making its way west. You know, certainly planes are the quickest ways of spreading infectious diseases. I mean, during the hoof and mouth disease outbreak in the UK a few years ago, you know, in many international terminals, you had to walk across floor mats soaked in disinfectant, sort of hopefully to kill any sort of stray bacteria that might have been hitching a ride on your shoes. During the SARS outbreak in 2003, you know, that respiratory virus, there were reports that it had spread from China to five countries in 24 hours. I mean, that's fast. And if you knew anyone traveling in Southeast Asia at that time, it was like being in a plague zone. And these guys, there was an all the black humor that goes along with it. And I actually remember my wife and I took a long weekend in Toronto after the SARS scare there had died down. And I'll tell you, it was like a ghost town. Empty hotels, empty restaurants. And then the second day we were there, a new SARS case popped up and all hell broke loose again. Canceled flights, disrupted businesses. You know, globally, I've seen estimates that the financial impact of the SARS epidemic was around $30 billion, and it's billion with a B, dollars. So you can just imagine if this avian flu mutates and jumps to human. You know, personally, I'm not so much worried about the spread of the disease as I am me catching it. And catching it from some, sitting from some sneezing carrier two rows behind me. You know, from my personal experience, like I've said, a few weeks back and through my career in traveling, planes are pretty good environments for spreading diseases. I mean, passengers are, in close quarters. I mean, literally you've got 150, 200 people sitting in a metal tube at 35,000 feet, breathing their own recycled air. I mean, it's actually surprising that that more people don't get sick. And you think about it, even at the next step past that, you got multiple people sitting in the same seat between cleanings. The FAA says that one way to limit the spread of the disease is to force the recirculated or this recycled air through high-efficiency particulate filters or HEPA filters. To trap, and they say that sort of traps fungi, and germs, and they're very sort of tight and very tight filters. And they say these filters are used, these HEPA filters are used on about 3/4 of the commercial airplanes. I'll tell you what though, 25% of the jets without them, that sort of feels like a big number. To me, actually, it feels like increasing the amount of fresh air And reducing the amount of circulated air, breathing less of somebody else's exhausts would be, would be a good thing, especially if you're trying not to spread a disease throughout the entire cabin of the air of the airplane. What do you do? During the SARS outbreak, there was a big push to get people to wash their hands with soap more often. That seems easy enough. And I'll tell you though, after I caught my cold, I got a lot of advice. A common one was to use an inhaler or nasal sprayer during the flight to keep your nasal passages moist. Apparently, those moist passages do a better job of warding off bacteria and viruses. The sort of the moistness, the mucous membranes, are actually there as a protection device to sort of slough off bacteria and viruses. Going a little further was sort of the suggestion to cover my nose and mouth with a wet cotton handkerchief. Messy, but it's said to, again, do the same thing, block the spread of germs, while also sort of providing a humidity for your lungs, again, so you've got some healthy mucus that can slough off these germs. I saw one woman in a flight last week in a surgical mask. I don't know if she was sick or just being considerate of others or thought everyone else was sick and was just worried about herself. Let's go to Memphis in time, baby. Memphis in the meantime, girl. The last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, spending time in a southern city. Yeah, I don't know if I've mentioned this in past podcasts, but I grew up in Memphis. My family moved down here from Chicago when I was 10 years old, and I went to middle school and high school here, so it's fun to come back. Now, the last time I was down, I met up with a couple of my best friends from high school. I hadn't seen them in a number of years. This time, though, went downtown for sort of the full tourist experience. Dry rub ribs at the Rendezvous and a walk down the renovated Beale Street area. The Rendezvous was just like I remembered it. Good ribs, indifferent waiters, that whole sort of dry rub thing, you know, not supposed to put sauce. Although they do have sauce on the table. And a big place, a lot of people in there, waiters just sort of slamming down plates of ribs. You order them, 3 minutes later, boom, you've got that plate of rib. I wasn't so excited. I don't quite remember the plastic utensils from the last time I was there, but they were good ribs. Beale Street, though, is a complete change. When I lived here, you wouldn't unlock your car if for some unknown reason you got lost and ended up having to drive down Beale Street. Now, on a Wednesday night in October, the street is jammed. It's flanked with bars and restaurants, and it's just full of tourists. They've closed off the streets for like about a three block length of Beale Street in this sort of bar and restaurant district. And they got B.B. King's Blues Restaurant sort of anchoring it, and you've got live bands sort of playing outside. It's a great vibe, and they got the street blocked off. And so you can literally sort of get a beer in a go cup, and you can just sort of walk down the street and sample a bunch of different bands and kind of get the vibe. So it sort of has sort of like this sort of Bourbon Street like sort of bar hopping ambiance. I was just amazed. Also, I guess Wednesday night is motorcycle night, so all the bikers somehow descend on Beale Street. So the street was just lined on both sides with big bikes, not only Harleys but Yamahas and everything. It was great. It was just a lot of fun. You know, Memphis is an interesting town, whereas Atlanta and Charlotte have lost most of their southernness. Atlanta is just another big city, and Charlotte, with all the banks, might as well be a New Jersey suburb. Memphis has kept its southern feel. It's got sort of a slower pace, a politeness. I remember when I was just 10 years old and just arrived from Chicago. That slowness, that expectation that you would address adults with sir and ma'am, all that stuff made for a very rough transition. But now I enjoy it because it's a little different. My favorite Memphis story happened a few years back when I flew down from the East Coast to sell some work into FedEx. And I had taken the last flight out of Newark to Memphis, and just because of weather in Newark, I had gotten in late. It had been one of those sort of ground hold situations in Newark, out on the runway, waiting an hour for release. I hadn't eaten most of the day, and when I got into Memphis, I was famished. But I got in about 11 o'clock, and so all the restaurants were closed. So got my rental car, pulling off of I-240 from my hotel, I saw an all-night Taco Bell, and I thought to myself, "All right, here you go. I'll just grab a burrito from the drive-through, and I can at least put something on my stomach so I get to sleep tonight." So I'm going around. I order it. I come around to the drive-through window, and the guy looks out, and he's going to hand me my burrito, and he looks out, and he says, "Is that a brand new Monte Carlo?" Now, you know, this is 11:30, 12 at night. I just got the car. I just got in the car. I put the key in it. So I look around and I look at the chrome and I look at the steering wheel. I said, "Well, yeah, it is. It is a brand new Monte Carlo." And I look at the odometer. It's got, I don't know, like 500 miles. And I look at him and go, "Well, yeah, you're right. It is a brand new Monte Carlo." And he says, "Well, now, how do you like that car?" I said, "Well, you know, for the 10 miles that I drove it from the airport, it seems to work pretty well for me." And he looks, "That is a fine looking car. That is a great look. Oh, here's your burrito." So here I was now, just famished. I just wanted my dinner. But here was a guy. He was very interested in having a conversation with me, and just a really nice guy. Oh, I've got a friend of mine who lives in Bloomington, Indiana. Just moved there from Connecticut. And one of the things that she said in her blog is one of the toughest things for her to get used to is the fact that the people in sort of the middle part of the country, and for her, Bloomington, Indiana, just want to chat, as opposed to the East Coast, where she said she feels like they've always got sort of an agenda. So you're always wondering, what are they trying to get at with a conversation? In the middle part of the country, people will just chat just to pass the time and be friendly. And in Memphis, it was absolutely that sort of thing. Because eventually, when I ended up walking into the hotel, here it is, it's now midnight, I'm beat, I got a morning meeting, and I just want to get in my room. And the check-in agent, she wants a conversation. "Hi, how are you doing? Where are you from? How was your trip? You know, do you like Memphis? Is this the first time you've been here? How is everything for you? What can I do for you?" The nicest people in the world, and really a very different vibe from most of the places you travel. So, you know, remembering this, remembering all this when I got into Memphis yesterday morning, and whenever I come in here, I consciously slow my stride as I go through that Memphis airport when I land. I try and sort of drive my pulse down a beat or two, and I also make sure that I switch to decaf. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 19. I'm going to wrap this up and try and get one more barbecue sandwich before I leave Memphis tonight back for Chicago. I hope you've all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you've enjoyed the whole string of podcasts. Here we've done 19 of them. That's a shocking number for me. But I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Again, thanks for the emails at comments@travelcommons.com. For the comments that you leave at the travelcommons.com website, and for the feedback and the kind words that you leave at podcastalley.com. Again, I appreciate all the feedback. I hope you enjoy this, and I look forward to talking to you soon. Until then, take care. Bye now.